podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is the Anfield Wrap. I'm Neil Atkinson. I'm joined by Philip Blundell, by Jake Nolan, and by Ian Ryan. Full title there for Philip. Used to be Mr. Phil, but he's getting the full hit these days. We're brought to you in association with Access Sport. First and foremost, you can go to accesssport.ac.uk/TAW if you want more information. Access Sport employ industry-leading and highly qualified staff who are active within the sport industry to develop students and prepare for them for life as effectively as possible. The rigours of that industry include coaches, physios, and sports science staff who work at professional academies and teachers who are qualified to a master's level within their field. There's loads and loads of technology that Access use. I've seen some of it quite recently. Coaching sessions and games using coaches' voice and sports session planner, and it allows students and players and other coaches and parents to see the sessions being delivered, and it allows those students to learn from those coaches and professional clubs around the world and develop further. Practical sessions are recorded using VEO cameras, which is an automated camera, which allows players to build up a montage of footage to send to clubs or to US colleges to gain scholarships. The students benefit from the immersive environment to help them experience roles and develop their skills. They don't deliver their programs in big buildings, but more in real sports environments such as football clubs, leisure centres and state-of-the-art football hubs. It is a realistic sporting experience and environment, and if you do know people who would be interested in this, do share with them accesssport.ac.uk/TAW for more information. There's lots and lots in there for you, and we are very pleased to be partnering with Access across the next few weeks. We aren't that pleased to be talking about Liverpool Football Club at the moment, Philip. It's the most concerning performance of the season. It's the most concerning setup of the season, I'll say, and I want to go on to talk about the shape, because I think people who've said that the shape is a tweak are absolutely kidding themselves. It was hugely different. But the first and most concerning bit for me is it managed to sort of combine the worst bits of all the bad performances so far this season into one unholy mess.
Yeah, there's been games where we just played badly. There's been games where we've been unlucky. And when you've been unlucky, you can go, we've had a bit of hard lines, but everything else was acceptable or something like that. There's bad decisions from players. There's bad decisions from managers. But on Saturday, it was everything bar the bad luck. You take the bad luck out and you can sort of make excuses off the back of luck. You couldn't make any excuses about anything.
Well, the lucky's been 0-0 at half-time.
Exactly.
And that's what drove me mad about the second half.
You're getting at half-time at 0-0. There's so many stupid decisions. There was one just before half-time, actually. There's probably about, I think there's 2 minutes added, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And the goalkeeper's got the ball.
Yeah.
And it goes quick. And I'm just like, take half-time. Just take half-time. It's 0-0. It's 0-0. We've been poor. We need to go in and sort ourselves out. And we're taking quick throws out. And this is the goalkeeper who would win player of the season by, like, the biggest landslide in voting history if there was a vote today. And even he's doing the stupid stuff. And then we get in at half-time. We don't really change a great deal. Joel Matip plays a ball into midfield. I have no idea why he's playing that ball. And some people go, well, Henderson shouldn't have been making this run or that run. The ball shouldn't have been going there in the first place, to the point where Henderson knows where the ball should go and is moving to the right back to go and support the right back, because that's where the ball's going to go, because that's the only place the ball can go. Then all of a sudden, he's played it. He's not even played onto Henderson's right foot. It's awful. It's just so bad. It was as bad as the idea that we watched the first 5 minutes and didn't do anything to react to the fact that they were effectively playing seven in midfield. They basically played Ewan Ferguson up front, two centre-backs, and then seven midfielders. There was Mitoma and March stand on the touchline, make the pitch massive, and the full-backs basically go and stand next to them. So when the ball goes to one of them, we're doubled up on. We managed to be doubled up everywhere on the pitch. It just made no sense whatsoever that 45 minutes, we didn't change anything whatsoever.
It's... Jake, the shape's a mess, absolute mess. Liverpool managed to be uncompetitive. They managed to be idiotic. Phil there with two examples. I can think of about another 10. Both in terms of managing the game, managing the fact that they're not playing well. I'll say it again, they were lucky at half-time. Joel Matip sorted that out pretty quickly. Say what you want, fair play to him. If you want your list of concerning things, I've got my most concerning things aren't so much that Liverpool were absolutely abject shite first half. My concerning things are pre-match and then are as soon as it goes, I'd say 1-0, but maybe two if you're feeling generous. You just think immediately there's no way back. And this team's lost a lot of games, but I've very rarely seen it beaten in the way in which you got to see it on Saturday until this season. And at the minute, Liverpool need to watch themselves, because there is such a thing as losing, but there's something else which is being beaten, and Liverpool looked beaten.
Yeah, my perspective on this might be different to some people in the room, to be honest with you, Neil, because I didn't watch the game live, but I did put myself through watching most of it back, because I was playing myself. We had a game. But no one was doing this. I went and watched the back and made sure that we'd done it. So I knew the result. And also, being honest with you, the result didn't completely shock me because it's not like we've been pulling up any threes. And I've watched Brighton a fair bit, not only this season, but the last couple of seasons, and they're a really impressive football team. They really, really are. And they've got, not only they're really impressive football teams, they're better than us in areas that we used to be good at. And I think they really, really capitalised on that. But going back to Liverpool, I think the thing that I'm getting fed up of watching, seeing this Liverpool side more than anything else, is they're still playing like they're chasing 92 points. They're still playing like the one down all the time. And that you've got to hit this points total because it's us against City and it's this mad race and we're rushing everything and we're panicking because they really want to turn it around. And I think we've got great characters and great experience for that, and you can't blame them for wanting it. You can imagine that's coming from Klopp in the changing rooms. But my God, just slow it down. If we get a draw against Brighton away from home, there, it's a result.
There was nothing wrong. When I was watching it, Phil's got one example there. That's in the 2 minutes of injury stoppage time. There's loads of examples in that first half, Jake, where I'm going, lads, nil-nil on 60 is fine here.
Yeah.
I can see what's the way this game is going. I can see what's happening, and I'm just an idiot. Nil-nil on 60 is absolutely fine, boys. Nil-nil on 70, nil-nil on 89 would have been fine with the idea of maybe sling something at it and see if you get it, as you say. Because a point at Brighton right now, current situation's not great, but it's all right.
Brighton will do better sides than this incarnation of Liverpool this season at home. They will. They're a very, very good side. They've got danger all over the gaff, and until somebody comes and picks up a couple of their players and they've got to rebuild again, they'll do well. They really will. Because
I think they can win the FA Cup. I think they should try and win the FA Cup, and I think they can win the FA Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the qualifying for Europe and all that, it's all very much on, isn't it? So they'll do better teams than us, the division of us this season. But yeah, that's what I'm really fed up from Liverpool. It's not even, I wasn't even as gutted as I was, say, when we got beat by Brentford or when not Forest done us, because they're a better side. But that's one thing from Liverpool. Start playing to our strengths, start slowing it down, and ultimately admit that we're not in a race for 92 points. We're not one down from the kickoff. We've got to start picking up results.
The lack of pressure on, and not just every goal, Ian, on every opportunity that Brighton ends up sort of creating's maddening. But it is worth pointing out there's a lack of pressure on every goal. You know, I think it's a great finish, the second one from March. It's probably the best game of his life, to be honest with you, March. You know, everything that happens for him, the way it goes. And fair play to him for that. And again, you know, credit to the Brighton side. But there's so little pressure so often on Brighton as they were approaching our goal. And that's right the way through the team. Starts at the front, goes all the way to the back, obviously includes the middle. Dreadful.
Yeah, and I think I found myself in a position now where I'm hanging on the manager's every word for some kind of comfort. So before the game, he talks about Liverpool having a good week. They've got the 4 week to prepare. So you're thinking, surely to God, you're going to see some sign of a response or some sign of a recovery. Might not even be a win, but some sign of them getting back to looking like the old Liverpool. And I don't mean suddenly being able to smash teams to bits or anything like that, but where they are getting close to the ball. And the manager talked before the game. He said, it's ball-orientated defending. So in an ideal scenario, they want one, if not two, if not three people around the opposition when they've got the ball. Now they get that for the second goal. Thiago, Henderson and Fabinho are all within touching distance. You could throw a fucking blanket over them. The problem is, and the manager talks about this pre-game, once you break the press, the pitch is enormous. And it's been enormous all season. Because a lot of those footballers we're talking about now, I think if you had every single one of them in a room by themselves, they'd say, listen, I need fucking legs around me here. I need legs around me. And I was shocked to see him go with the exact same midfield. And that's before you get into the shape, which I've had a look at the average positions and it's wild, the shape. It really is. It's also extremely deep when you compare it to how Brighton set up, where the fullbacks are really high. Liverpool's fullbacks aren't high at all. And they have very little possession, really, in terms of what you'd expect a Liverpool team to have. They have less than 40%. But you can be fine with that at Brighton. Arsenal have less than that, and they go there and win 4-2 because Liverpool's transition through the pitch was awful. So when they've got the ball, it's an absolute shit show, to be perfectly honest. Don't quite know where Chamberlain's playing. He's almost level with Salah, very central. He is left side, but it's quite central. Thiago's trying to push up into a number 10 position when he can. And then Gakpo's slightly ahead of the rest, but it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work, not even close to working. And Liverpool are now in a real mess, Neil, and you're thinking, well, you're struggling to see how they get out of this, but get out of it they must, and it needs to start in the game against Wolves.
Well, we'll come back around to the game against Wolves. I want to on the shape, Phil. First half average positions, it looks like a back three. And in the ground, I thought it looked like a back three. Robertson is so deep, Trent has advanced. Konate plays through the middle. Matip, it was as though it was as though Liverpool went into the game thinking, how can we expose Joel Matip as much as humanly possible? That was what I, you know, genuinely the way in which he plays out, he gets yellow carded on about 25 minutes for something daft with Matoma. But it was as though Matip was playing right hand side of a back three in there. Trent is in the average positions in terms of where the ball's received first half. He's Liverpool's most dangerous player, but he's also simultaneously Liverpool's third most advanced, which suggests he's almost playing like a right wing back in there. Fabinho and Henderson were patrolling in front of the back three, as it was. Thiago's pushed up into a 10 position. Salah's desperately just trying to find a way onto the ball. Chamberlain's playing left, but you've got no real sense of where. My point here, Phil, is people in general who've talked about the game have said Liverpool tweaked the shape. The manager sort of said we made a few slight differences. For me, almost every player on the pitch was playing a different position to the one that they normally play for Liverpool. And before we get into whether or not that worked, because it manifestly fucking didn't, there is, that to me suggests a level of panic. To have moved away so hugely from what's worked for Liverpool, to have gone so dramatically to something else that was so easily bypassed by Brighton, I'd hasten to add, because they very cleverly got the ball to Lewis Duncan, he passed to Pascal Gross, and that was the end of the matter. That was the beginning, middle and end of how to beat Liverpool's press, was passed to Pascal Gross, who's quite good at passing as well himself. Watching the oddness of it, this was quite a major change. And all I could think of when I was watching that major change, also having been surprised by the team selection, was why don't you just change a couple of the players? Either so they fit this, what's happening here. So, for instance, Joe Gomez would be more comfortable than Joel Matip, I'd argue. We've got a host of lads who all want to play number 10, who'd be more comfortable with it than Thiago Alcantara. You could then drop Thiago back if you wanted to play him. But he does what he does. And I'm genuinely, when I say I'm concerned by that, I'm agog with it. Not so much, I was surprised by the team selection, really surprised, but seeing it play out, good God.
Yeah, it just absolutely didn't work. I was sort of, it'll sound a bit weird this, but I'm sort of, in a way, slightly reassured by the idea that he was prepared to do something different. The fact that it doesn't work is not good at all. But the fact that he's looked at it and gone, right, I'm going to try something a bit different here, because what he was doing previous week just absolutely categorically was never going to work. So something needed to change. I'm just not sure that the shape might work, these players might work, but it's not working together. I'm looking at that average position now. I can see it on the screen. I know listeners and viewers will not be able to see this, but it's weird. It's basically 3-2, and one of the two is slightly to the right. Then there's one in front of it. Then there's two more to the right. Then there's like an inside left forward and a centre forward. It's just lopsided and there's no pattern. Like, and then you on the screen you've got the Brighton one.
Yeah,
and it looks like a football team. It's set up, it's got a shape, it's got a defined structure, it's got players sort of near each other and near where they should be, and Liverpool doesn't. And this isn't even like it's... That can't be... I suspect that Brighton team has possibly never played together before. When you actually look at the players they've got and you think that Alexis McAllister just come back from the World Cup.
Liverpool's definitely hasn't.
There's a lot of Trossard who's not there. There's Estupinan hasn't been that much of a regular. There's a lot of...
From the Arsenal game where they used 4-2. Exactly. Casido and McAllister don't start that game. Trossard does, for instance.
But it looks like they've trained in a way that makes it work. Like, we've done something different. But it almost looks like they found out about that at 1:30. That's how it didn't work. I've got no objection to him trying something different. But if you're going to try something different and you just add 7 days between your matches, there's time on a training pitch to do something and try and make it work. And it just doesn't look like they put it into practice on a training ground.
Do you think that he was going to do that before? So the question, I didn't see him answer it anywhere. So if he did, listeners, you know, forgive me. The thing I wanted to ask him was, were you going to do this before or after you realised you couldn't play Nunez? Is this something that he changes to when they can't play Nunez, or is this something that he was going to do with Nunez? Mm-hmm. If it's something they were going to do with Nunez, it makes a little bit more sense to me, because they had loads of space in behind to have hurt Brighton and then pushed Brighton back and made Brighton a bit more dysfunctional on the one hand, or alternatively exploited the fact that there was tons and tons of space to explode into.
So that's what I hope the answer is. The plan was to do it, and we decided just to do it anyway. But then the immediate question becomes, well, who on earth do you think is running behind?
But then change back. Or after 20 minutes, realise that we're getting outnumbered in midfield and move Chamberlain back into midfield and go. I mean, if you have to go 4-5-1 away from home and really sort of make the space in the middle of the pitch compact,
be 0-0 on 60.
And make it just a grind and bore, do it. Because the idea that anyone was expecting us to go to Brighton and just out-football them and dominate them, it's just not, you can't do it against Brighton because they're a good team. And we just looked ill-prepared. It was concerning. You used the word concerning before, and that was concerning for me because it was, as I said at the start, you can sort of make excuses or say, well, it was this problem and that might not be the problem this week. But it was like three different problems in terms of what went wrong, and that's bad.
What you just outlined there, Neil, that was Arsenal's way home. So they used Martinelli in that exact way, where you'd imagine if Nunes had been fit, they would have used him in virtually the same way, but he would have been the outlet. Liverpool have no outlet. It kind of stunned me, really, just how unnerved they are at times, but I couldn't really figure out what Salah was doing and where he was playing. I know you've talked about him being maybe the one shining light, Neil, but...
Oh, no. Just be clear.
Or he's trying his best, or he's maybe one who you're looking towards, you might be able to have done something. I thought he was really poor, to be honest. And I think, listen, there's bigger things at play at the minute, so I don't think there's a big light being shone on certain footballers. But I was hoping and looking to someone like Salah for a little bit more at the weekend. And listen, he's been unbelievable for this football club, so let's have it right. He's been nothing but sensational across his career at Liverpool. But I think he was another one where maybe you're looking for a little bit more from him. You feel so incredibly sorry for Gakpo. And I've seen people maybe having a little bit of a pop online and stuff. And listen, he's come into an absolute mess. And I think this is where, when you talk about recruiting from a position of strength, that's why... That saying's a thing. It's not something someone's just made up. It's important to get this right because you want to be bringing people in when it's going well. Regardless of it being football or not, in any walk of life, you want to be bringing people into your organisation or your workplace when things are working because guess what? They get time to adjust, they get time to settle, they'll get support from teammates and colleagues and stuff. At the minute, this lad's just been thrown in and it looks like it's going to be so hard for them to find an adjustment period because the pressure's immediately on him and the light's immediately shining on him because Liverpool are looking for a spark from somewhere, and that's incredibly unfair on him. And that's why when people talk about getting some of this right in the summer, I don't think Liverpool would have been a million miles off if they'd done a bit of recruitment properly in the summer. If they brought a couple of midfielders in, yes, they've had injuries and sometimes you can't, you can't foresee that. It just happens. You've got to cop for it. But I don't think they would have been a million miles away with a couple of decent midfielders with legs. I think Liverpool would have been there to thereabouts again this season. That might seem wild now because we are so far off, but I don't think it was incredibly hard to keep this machine ticking over if they'd done the right things at the right time. The problem you've got now is if you look to go and bring someone in, and fuck me, I want them to, but if you do, you've still got the same situation where you're bringing someone in and they're probably thinking, I've got to sort this out. I've got to fucking deal with this now, because now it does look such a mess. And you're thinking, well, probably one lad isn't going to sort it. They're going to need a little bit of time to feel their way in and get back to some kind of shape and system. So it's hard for the manager now. It really is difficult. And you can almost see it in him that he's feeling the stress and strain of this. And that's a really sad place to be.
Yeah, I think a couple of weeks ago, I think that was sort of what I thought about if you'd have freshened things up or done this, that or the other. But now I'm sort of looking at it and I'm not quite sure it's the case. I just think we're reacting badly to things in matches. We're starting off with the wrong ideas, and I'm just not sure that a body here or there is
got to start somewhere. Though,
I agree with that.
This mess themselves.
I agree with that.
So you've got to start somewhere now. But the problem is, if you do it, it's incredibly hard for someone to come in now and fix this.
I agree. Immediately. But then there's games even 3 months ago, like Forest away, for example. That wasn't that the players weren't good enough. It's to do with that we were just set up in the wrong way and making bad decisions, and the more bad decisions you make, the further down you go and the harder it comes to bounce back. I just think I'm a bit more concerned than the idea that this is a couple of players and it gets sorted out regardless of how low it drops. It's just a bit, I'm just not totally sure what I'm watching and what we're trying to do.
This is where I feel for the manager though, slightly, in the sense of they're all valid points, but I think if he was in this room now and the cameras are off, he'd be going, I know lads have been telling them to put their hands in the pockets for some time. And I'm all in as well. It's like, you know, does a midfielder or two sort our problems for Wolves in the cup or whatever the game is after that? No, it doesn't, but it might help us for next season and the season after that. And I think that's what we've got to be building towards.
That's what I want him to be building towards. Yeah, and exactly. That's what I want. But that's where I find it difficult is, off all the noises, I'm sort of with Phil in terms of, I don't know what way they wanted to play this season. Do they want to play with an attacking midfielder in the three at the start of the season?
Harvey's been playing in midfield for 18 months now. Obviously he gets injured in the middle, but you know, Harvey Elliott wasn't a solution this summer. Harvey Elliott was something that he did last season because he liked it and he liked Harvey Elliott. That's why I'm not sure it's quite as simple as signing this midfielder or that midfielder or anything, because he's picking a midfield that doesn't work and he's also picking Harvey Elliott in midfield. It's not, he's doing some of these things because he actually wants to do them.
I think in the main, I mean, listen, there's plenty of conversations to have about systematic changes and personnel changes. But I honestly, if you could look back at Liverpool's team sheets, it's something that, you know, I always look at. I think in the main, all he's tried to do is get his 11 best players on the pitch. I think that's all he's tried to do at most times, and that's been a struggle. And I think that's where this falls down, because we're so reliant on the players turning up.
But that wasn't what he was doing from, say, 2017 until 2020. He wasn't picking his 11 best players. He was picking players who suited the challenge that was in front of him, and he was picking players who were, for instance, really physically robust. And he's not recruited, apart from Konate, a really physically robust player since 2020, whenever he's gone into the market. And he's not, you know, this is sort of where, like, My line on this at the minute is that if this is a season of transitions happen, but I've just got no idea what we're transitioning to, and I've got no idea if I'm in favour of what we're transitioning to. And there is a thing where Elliot, for instance, starts Chelsea at home last season. Yeah. When Chelsea, by the way, looked as though they were going to be very close to winning the league. Yeah. At that point under Tuchel, you felt they were European champions. It was the third or fourth game. They come to Anfield and he starts Harvey Elliott. And this isn't a go at Harvey Elliott, because I think that's what he wanted. That's what the manager wanted. He wanted that transition in that general direction. But I don't know, firstly, if that's right, but also, secondly, if he wanted that, then why doesn't he buy an attacking midfielder?
No, well, listen, I can completely agree. I mean, and you know, the question I've posed to myself, and you know, when I've been having a pint with friends or coffee or even in these situations, maybe on other shows, is ultimately, Jürgen was going to leave the club next year, and I don't know whether he was planning much beyond that. You know, we don't know that really, do we? And it, you know, but now, obviously, he is for the reasons he signed a new deal and whatnot. And I think I understand that the challenges that's come with the transition this season or not, but I do still think it's down to the lack of preparation, not having the time, not having the backing, and ultimately on the back of last season, which we all know was heartbreaking for the players more than any fans would have had. And also what it took out of the legs. Now, we can keep pointing to the excuses. We don't want to do that, but I think we've got to start making decisions now for next season.
And that's what I think.
And that's what I come down to. So we're going to have disappointments like this, but as long as we start making decisions based on that, then that's all we can hope for.
That's what I want to see next phase, both on the pitch and off the pitch, away from the pitch. The next phase I think you've got to see is, all right, this is what we're now moving to. But this is one of the reasons I wasn't quite at this point for this one, Ian, but that's why I was shocked he's gone with the same midfield three. Because if we are transitioning, I refuse to believe we're transitioning to another season of the three of them together, and that's not getting on any of the backs. But to be really clear, Thiago was nowhere near it before he went number six. Fabinho couldn't get near the ball. Henderson got it more, but when he got it, it was shite. For people who think I don't criticise Henderson, I'll say it again, just if you want to put it up with subtitles. Henderson got it, and when he got it, he was shite in there as well. You know, there is the three of them in different ways drove me mad. I've got a bit of sympathy for Thiago, and I think it's interesting the manager keeps Thiago on. He does the other two, he keeps Thiago on. But he's the one who's got him picked him number 10, and then he moves him all the way back to number 6. And again, when you're talking about what is it we think we're trying to achieve here, the fact that a footballer who's probably not played number 10 since he was 19 does an hour in it, and then gets dropped all the way back to being the deepest of the midfielders. Maybe just pick him as the deepest of the midfielders in the first place if you want to do something a bit different. If there was a game to do that in, I sort of weirdly think Brighton's a little bit that game, although to be fair to Brighton, Evan Ferguson is much more of a unit and puts himself about. I thought he was really impressive, Ferguson. But that's a side point. My point here is that if we are transitioning, why is he picking the same three?
Yeah, and I think I think we talk about Thiago, maybe feeling sorry for him. I do as well a little bit because I don't think he's changed as a footballer like Fabinho and Henderson have changed as footballers. So I think Fabinho now, it just appears that he's on the slide. And I think there was a debate about, you know, is it poor form? Is his best years behind him? He's only 29, so I think that's where you struggle to square it a little bit because he shouldn't be on the slide at 29. He just shouldn't be. But I think they've genuinely been shocked by just how much of a cliff he's dropped off. And I think that's really... I think you can see it in how the managers reacted to him at times where they've clashed heads a little bit. I think they're genuinely shocked at just how much Fabinho has dropped off. Listen, maybe he'll come back, but it looks unlikely at the minute because this is over a long period of time now, despite one or two flashes after the World Cup. Henderson looks a mile off it. Again, he's okay in a team where if you can get a Rice and Bellingham around him like they did for England, he suddenly looks okay again because he's got the legs around him. Where I feel sorry for Thiago is I don't think he's changed as a footballer, really, since Liverpool bought him. I think he's always been a footballer who, by his own words, he's never been really one who's embraced the challenge of running around the pitch. He offers you a certain skill set and he's fabulous at doing that. He's brilliant on the ball. He's great as a, you know, to use a Brendan Rodgers quote, that technician thing. He's unbelievable at doing that. And I think we're suddenly asking him to do things that he's just not comfortable with. And I think that's a massive problem. But it brings you back to the point, Neil, is why has he gone with them again as a three? Because it hasn't worked this season. All three of them are crying out for legs around them. I think now we're in a scenario where you can talk about the effects of last season having a physical effect on this Liverpool team. And I think that's where the group as a whole would have welcomed one or two additions just to give them a bit of a lift because we've seen before that can happen. But I also think mentally now they're all struggling because they've got to a stage where, and it happened very quickly in the season, where they knew they weren't going to win the league. They knew it was gone. And I think that's very hard for them to take on board, having gone so close to all four trophies, having gone so close so many times to another league title where you look this season and it's probably going to be won with under 90 points or potentially, although Arsenal put up a good fight, to be fair, of going above 90 points. But it's not going to be the same kind of season that Liverpool have lived and breathed where they've gone head-to-head with Manchester City. And I think that's hard for them to take. And I think a lot of them have struggled with it mentally to the point now where it's almost like, we can't fucking sort this. The season's fucking gone. It's completely gone. And I think that's wrecked a lot of heads. And I think you're seeing that play out in games where when they go behind, it's just another, well, we can't sort this. The game's gone. The season's gone. And I think that's where the players are struggling with it. Maybe the manager's struggling with it a little bit as well. And it's going to take a big upsurge now to get them back on track, I think.
Yeah, I think the Fabinho thing is a real, real problem because what's happened to him, I don't think you could predict what was going to happen to him. And I think part of the thing that we've been doing for the last couple of years, 3 years, is basically saying, right, well, we'll sort the midfield. Then, in the meantime, we'll sort the strikers, we'll sort the defence. And I think we can all say that the defence and the attack is in an acceptable thing, not perfect, but it's acceptable, and it's something that in the summer you don't need to do much. Maybe you might freshen one of the centre backs up, maybe, but it's not an awful position to be in. Whereas now we all know the midfield needs work, and I sort of think that it was like, well, there's Fabinho there, he's not even 30, we can sort of get through to the summer and he can be a huge part of getting us through to the summer, and then we can go, and he isn't getting us through to the summer. And all of a sudden, it's like there's a huge problem here. And it's not really, it's something that probably sounded great in theory when they thought about it. And it just isn't a thing because what you're wanting him to do, he's unable to do. He just can't do it anymore. And it's a huge problem.
Yeah, I've got a little thing on screen again just on this from StatsBomb around Fabinho. Fabinho's last sort of 30 games versus 36 from all in the league, by the way, 36 from the start of the 2018 season to when he gets the injury in the November of the 1920 season. And interestingly, and this is the thing I always think with Fabinho, is passing. He's completing more passes now than he was, but his deep progressions have gone from 7.5 a game to 5, which is quite a marked percentile difference. His XG build-up's dropped off. Number of successful dribbles, whilst it was never that high, that's diminished per game as well. In their pressure regains has diminished from him being in the 65th percentile to the 9th. Number of pressures has diminished from being in the 56th percentile to the 16th in there as well, as you sort of go through. And that's worth pointing out. It's tougher to do Henderson if someone's going, and fucking hell, he's not doing Henderson, and I can't believe I've got to do this at the minute. But the reason why is because Henderson plays more than one position. So you don't get something that's quite as clear a sort of a thing as a lad who just literally just plays number 6, because it depends upon the role in there as well in terms of what's asked. But that's where Fabinho suddenly finds himself. And Jake, I think that is the one that's maybe Everton slightly caught them on the hop. I felt as though Fabinho was, well, it's quite interesting actually, because he scores a few goals in the second half of last season, but I felt you could see his performances were diminishing a little bit as the season wore on during the last campaign. I think he was just beginning to me to look as though he dipped a little bit, but then he gets the injury in May. I've said repeatedly I'd have picked Keita ahead of him in the Champions League final, because I just sort of felt, and given the nature of the way they thought the game would play out, we just have a little bit more spark, a little bit more forward passing from the heart of that midfield if we went with Henderson and Keita in there. So my point being is that it's not necessarily being wise after the event, but I think they might be surprised by how stark the drop-off's been.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear for everyone to see, isn't it? And, you know, you can speculate on the reasons, you know, whether it be injury, mentally, you know, systematically, I would argue probably he's been hung out to dry as much as anybody else in that team, really, potentially given his skill set. But I think that the thing that I struggle with, Neil, more than anything else, is that there's... We talk about Liverpool like we're an elite side because that's where we've been operating the past 4 to 5 years, and ultimately that's where we as a fan base want to be, and that's and, you know, that's where we are, that's where I believe we are. But no player plays in a midfield three with the form that he's been playing in the last 12 months in any other team that we like to think that we're challenging with. You know, they have a replacement who's there ready to take the place and be as good as. And to be honest with you, I think if you're having a quiet word for Vinho, you know, I think he wouldn't half mind just being taken off the firing line a bit. Just 6 weeks, I'll come back in the cup games and then get yourself back in the team. Do you know what I mean? But he's so important to how we set up, and we're trying to play him into form, and it's just not happening. And I just don't know where it's going to come from. And I think with these systematic changes, it benefits him less than anybody else.
On all of that, I mean, does anyone want to slaughter anyone else while we're here?
Mo Salah.
Go on.
I don't think he's been good enough. I think there were times last season when we were challenged on all fronts where we weren't playing that well. But Mo Salah came to the party, especially before Christmas, and ultimately, you know, got his kick started. Now, we spoke a lot here about slaughtering people, Fabinho, systematically, whatever, but ultimately you need the lad who puts the ball in the back of the net to start putting the ball back in the net, and then things start looking a little bit better.
Going to earn that level of money, you probably need to be a bit more involved than when getting games like that. Just, you should basically be getting the ball and trying to make something happen. And he hasn't been doing that. This will sound a bit harsh, but if you're going to play someone 350, 400 grand a week, whatever it is, they've got to produce. When the chips are down, this is the player who's got to go, right, this is me, get me the ball, I will do something. And he's not hiding or anything like that, and he's not trying. He's just not doing it, is he?
Again, he might be suffering from the kind of, you know, similar thing I said before, where they're all feeling a little bit sorry for themselves.
His year last year was even worse as well, wasn't it, when you think about it? He had all the downs that they had, and he had the AFCON, and he had the failing to qualify for the World Cup, so it's fair.
Yeah, and I mentioned Salah before when I said, you know, there are big lights being shone on lots of players because there's bigger issues at play than Mohamed Salah, let's be fair about it, but I don't think he's at the level at the minute. But I think what you know is he will come back to that level because he's that good a footballer. But I think at the minute, things like his touch seem off as well. I'm seeing him get older at ball, and it's just bouncing off him a little bit as well. So whatever's happening with the team, you feel like it's spreading right across the team. You know, the point got mentioned before about Alisson, maybe, you know, the last couple of games not quite been at his usual level. So, you know, it does seem to be spreading right through.
I think they just keep eroding each other. I think that you're able to, and so for instance, this game's a really good one of, and not least because of the changes, don't get me wrong, but suddenly... Matip's not just a fault for the goal. Matip had a terrible first half. Absolutely terrible first half. So suddenly, you know, you're looking at Matip going, Matip's not doing it. I thought the only Liverpool outfield player who played well for the 90 minutes was the right back, who I think has a really good game, all in, and, you know, performs all the way through. But the rest
he
of them...
He handled Matoma quite well, and that was something that I was actually quite concerned about in terms of... I just thought they were going to get the ball and he was going to do something and he'd go past him.
It's been brilliant.
Yeah, it's been brilliant.
It's been brilliant every week. I'm, you know, my point going back to Salah before was, I was trying to emphasise if you're a football team, your lad that your team's built around to put the ball in the back of the net needs to put the ball in the back of the net, and ultimately that's what he is. So that you know, that's my point on Salah. This Liverpool team only gets results if Mo Salah's regularly scoring goals.
Listen, you're going to slag the Reds off because, you know, they've been poor, but what I would say is, De Zerbi's done a great job at Brighton. He's done an absolutely brilliant job with them. To come in there and do what he's done and make that seamless transition from Potter to him, he's done it ever so well. And they look a real talented team. And I think, you know, the decisions to suddenly leave Trossard out, he was playing brilliantly at the start of the season, calls him out, you're not doing it for me, you don't even make the fucking squad. That he's making big calls, and I think they've suddenly got someone in Ferguson who, I thought he was brilliant, Neil, like you. If you look at him again, he's dropping so deep at times, he's helping out the midfield. You know, Brighton have got this thing going now where they've almost built a platform where Lallana can shine as well, because he does play really well, but there's so much legs around him. You know, Caicedo and McAllister doing all his work for him, and he's just able to get on the ball and play nice touches and stuff. And then they've got willing runners in Matoma and Solly Marsh, who I thought were excellent as well.
They look really well run. And one of the things that worries me at the minute, Ian, you know, is we talked about at times a couple of people leaving across the last couple of weeks. One who hasn't left or isn't down even to leave, but is looking after the sale, is the Mike Gordon thing. Mike Gordon was looking after Liverpool's football operations from a sort of an ownership perspective on top of that as the big overview, and suddenly he's off now doing the sale. And I'm, you know, there's people who can have different views on whether or not they want a sale, whether or not they want investment, what they want from the ownership. But I'm increasingly concerned, just in virtue that at the moment, if there's one person Liverpool could do with having all hands on deck, supporting the manager as well at quite a sort of a corporate level, it's Gordon. You know, I go back to all those pieces that were written about Edwards, Klopp and Gordon when things were going brilliantly, and Edwards has moved on, and I think you've got to take what Edwards wrote about moving on now at face value, because he hasn't gone and got another job yet. You know, the idea that he was burned out, I think, sort of plays out by the fact that it's now more than 12 months since he wrote that open letter, and he's not knocking around employed anywhere else. What worries me is that, you know, all the way through Liverpool, Klopp's time at Liverpool, there's been quite a high turnover of backroom staff. It's been ongoing, but the one thing that looks to me like it's changed is that sort of that intelligence above and around Jürgen and Mike Gordon. And there's part of me that at the minute I'd rather know that he was doing his job day to day with his door open two doors down from Jürgen at the minute, because that's where I'm beginning to go, well, hang on, who's doing that job? Because it's not as though everyone else who was working at Liverpool before Mike Gordon was seconded to go and work on the investment wasn't busy. So who on earth's doing that job at the minute?
Yeah, the instability thing's a problem. And I think we touched on it a little bit when we did the big question show about FSG and the model and stuff. And I think now the results are going the way they are, I think it's only naturally going to start looking into things a little bit deeper as well. And I think one of the things that's been talked about in terms of the manager is that he's a brilliant leader. And I think you always got the impression that he was a brilliant leader because he was always very comfortable with not being the man. He was across everything. He understood his own skill set and what he was really good at. And I think the fear is now, is he getting pulled into things that he shouldn't be part of? And it's entirely possible that he is, because very dissimilar to kind of Brendan Rodgers, you always got the impression he wanted to be involved in everything and have a handle on everything. Jürgen was never like that. He was very comfortable in his own skin. And I think he understood his role. And why leaders are brilliant leaders is because they are happy to have other experts in other areas who know more about stuff than they do. And Jürgen was always fine with that. And you felt his relationship with Gordon was of such a level where they got on really well. Yes, they may have disagreements and stuff, but
talked every day, all that sort of
thing. They talk all the time. And, you know, he probably takes a load off Jürgen and stuff in terms of some of the things that we're alluding to here. And all of a sudden, maybe the manager's getting dragged into stuff that he just wants no part of. And that can be a fucking distraction. That can be a massive distraction. Liverpool's a huge football club. And as you said there, all these people have got a role to play. And if all of a sudden they're all off doing different things and there's this uncertainty and this instability, then what does that mean for the likes of Klopp? Is he getting pulled into discussions and conversations that he actually just wants no part of because there's a football team to coach? That's a real thing at the minute, Neil. I think people are concerned about it, and rightly so.
I hate Liverpool instability, Phil. And playing shite adds to instability, and instability adds to playing shite. And that is sort of my concern at the minute from the outside looking in. I'm not one to basically blame John Henry for Thiago doing keepy-ups in his own penalty area. That's not what I'm trying to do here either. I'm concerned about a structural thing. The money conversation is always separate. I only want Liverpool to spend what it earns. That's always going to be my position. I do not want to ever say thank you to an owner. I think most people who own football clubs are absolute pricks, and I never want to feel as though we're in the debt of any of them, as far as I'm concerned. But the one thing that you can do is run the thing as perfectly as possible. And that's my minor concern at the moment, is that because there is the search for sale/investment, the eye is taken off the ball in terms of running the thing as well as you can.
Yeah, to some extent, I don't know, maybe, you know, it's entirely possible that we're just playing better. We don't have six or seven people injured and we can actually put an attack out, and that's not a thing though. So I'm just not entirely sure. Like,
fair.
if if Luis Diaz, Diogo Jota and Darwin Nunez are fit, all of a sudden it just looks better. It just looks much better, and it might take a bit of pressure off the midfield. It might mean that he could go back to that four up front that he did for a few weeks, and you know, binned it off in the end. It didn't work, but it might mean he could go back to that. I think sometimes
I think he binned it off in part because Jota gets injured.
Yeah, you're probably right with that, but I think
I didn't like it, by the way. No, that's part why he binned it off.
I think sometimes you can try and make excuses for things, but I'm not sure that's in this instance valid. I just think we're going out there with bad ideas and bad ways of execution. I don't think it runs that much deeper than that, to be perfectly honest.
Just going back to your point on people who own football clubs being pricks, Neil, as somebody who does own a grassroots football club, I can confirm we are all pricks.
Terrible set of lads.
Yeah. But yeah, also going back to your Edwards point, I remember reading that article at the time and being, his piece, which was very LinkedIn heavy, wasn't it? And I think he mentions change about 20 or 30 times. And I remember thinking, that's strange. I'm sure at the time that everyone anticipated needing that much change and how that was a big part of the thought process. But you look at it now and go, fucking hell, boys, we need to change here, don't we? And you absolutely hit the nail on the head. And I think the thing that worries me is I've always felt that this Liverpool ownership kind of post Kenny, going into Rodgers, and then definitely post Rodgers, have always operated as a football club and who knows what they're doing. And you point to them as a reference, say, we're one of the best run football clubs in the world, whatever way you look at it. But I'm looking at it at the moment going, well, the two sporting directors are out of office. There's a lot of turnover behind it. Now we're looking on a sale, which might be a sale, might be an investment. And there's just question marks all over the place. And when your team's playing shite, it doesn't help, does it?
Who should they buy? No, yeah. I want to do a thing here, by the way. Everyone does, and I think he plays perfectly fine at the weekend, and obviously the other lad does really well in the World Cup, but I think it's mad the amount of money people are trying to drop on Fernandes or Caicedo when Alexis McAllister is right there. I know he's just signed a new contract at Brighton, but he is right there. He's the second best midfielder in the league. The best midfielder in the league is Rodri. He's the second best midfielder in the league. He is absolutely unbelievable, Alexis McAllister. I would have Alexis McAllister tomorrow, but we'll park him for a second or two. Who would you have?
Well, listen, I'd take McAllister all day. There's no doubt about it. I think he's looked brilliant for Brighton. And obviously, you know, he goes and has the World Cup he has. And I think, you know, it makes everyone sit up and take notice. I thought Caicedo was good at the weekend, and I do like him. And I know you've questioned the fee, Neil, and maybe they could have gone and got him sooner. And I think that is a real question to pose at Liverpool's kind of, you know, men behind the scenes. You know, they're almost kind of waiting for some of this to happen. And, you know, there was a while back where you thought, listen, I've always wanted them to do more. I've always questioned them, and I've questioned them on a number of things off the pitch, but also I think there's times where they should and could have supported the manager more. And I think they've always tried to be really smart people, and I think it's been a long time since you could level it at them. There were times where they were getting the recruitment right and stuff, and people were looking at them, like Jake was saying before, and say, wow, they're doing it really well. You know, they're obviously challenging for the biggest honours whilst not spending loads and loads of money, and the model's pretty slick. And I think all the clubs were looking at Liverpool and saying that it's been a fucking long time since you could say that. And you know, you look at Brighton's team and the cost of it, and you look at the cost of McAllister and the cost of Caicedo. What did those lads cost? Probably less than 12 million for Caicedo and McAllister. And I think, you know, there are real questions to be asked. You know, it doesn't always mean you've got to go and spend a fortune, but there are players moving about, and there have been for a number of years now, 18 months, 2 years, that Liverpool have been nowhere near. And I think someone like that, and I thought Caicedo's performance was not too dissimilar to what you used to see from Fabinho, where he just screened the two centre-halves incredibly well, so you just couldn't get near them. And I know they're not bad centre-halves, but they're not centre-halves where you'd say, you know, the kind of top end in the league, but they were made to look good, and they were looking good because, yes, they're decent on the ball, but they've got that protection in front of them. And I think he's one now where if you're offered Brighton enough money, maybe you could get. I think they'd struggle to get McAllister out of the club in January. I think they'll struggle to get Caicedo out in January, to be fair. But I think they're two who are, you know, live runners and riders, Neil, to quote you, where they're in front of you and you know what they're about and you know they can operate at this level because they're doing it now. So I think they'd be two who Liverpool will have an eye on, but you know, whether they can get them out of the club is another matter. And obviously there's the Bellingham thing, but you know, the longer that goes on, the only time they're going to get him is the summer. And I think, you know, if Liverpool have the season where we think they might have now, where they end up finishing around about 8th, 9th or 10th, I mean, listen, I know people have said
it's it. Still 20 not, games to go.
There is 20 games to go, and you've got to remember that. And Liverpool have...
It doesn't feel like 20 games to go, because it feels like we played 100 games.
I know, but 10 points off top four now is a big gap. And listen, those gaps can be closed out. We know that. You can get on a run of form. Other teams can have injuries. There's lots of things that can happen. But it's hard to sit here and make a case for Jude Bellingham going, I'll join that club if they finish outside of the Champions League places, because he deserves to be playing at the very, very highest level, and he'll want that for himself, and fucking hell, he should get that because he's that good. So they may have to rethink the Bellingham thing, and Real Madrid seem to be front runners for it. Listen, it might not come down to Champions League or money, but it often does, and I think, you know, they may have to rethink who they go for. But I think someone like Casido or McAllister, yeah, those lads look excellent, and you wouldn't be far away from the big stuff. I think if you're able to bring in two lads of that calibre,
just need freshness, don't we? Really, I think that's the key thing. That there's, you know, you look at the age profile of Saicedo and McAllister, for example. I think they'd fit perfectly. I think there's a thing where there's stuff like, well, why didn't we just sign Saicedo for £4.5 million? Well, the reason you don't sign him for £4.5 million is because he needs games to develop. We weren't giving him the games to develop, were we? Let's be perfectly honest. We weren't signing him from Ecuador and sticking him in the Champions League quarterfinal. Like, you know, he barely plays for Brighton for a year, does he? I don't think.
Did you send him out on loan, Phil, though?
Yeah, but who are we sending players out on loan for to prepare to play for Liverpool? You know, I've cited this example a number of times, Conor Gallagher. Conor Gallagher does two loan spells from Chelsea. He has had absolutely zero preparation for playing for Chelsea. Zero. He may as well have not bothered going out on loan and played in their youth team instead.
But there's
got to
be a middle ground, Phil.
We can't live in a world, Phil,
where you're either paying £4 million for a player or £70 million for a player. Like, that's not a feasible world for Liverpool to be in.
What does it with Harvey Elliott?
Elliott goes to Championship team at 17, though. It's a completely different kettle of fish to go into a Championship team who play football at 17.
I'm prepared to be really sympathetic and I take your general sort of Caicedo point, but we can't live in a world where Liverpool can only buy midfielders for 70 million.
I agree with that. I'm not saying we need to buy them for £70 million. I'm just talking about the idea that you would bring some of these players in and play them. You know, he didn't play midfielders, he has, and he claims to like last season. He played four midfielders for basically 6 months. That was it. And then we want to get players now who were prepared to carry us forward without any preparation to actually play for us. It's a really tough one. I'd like it to not be as tough, but it's really difficult to do to keep this ticking over whilst also trying to win.
But when the market's like it is, though, Phil, if you don't get them in at that early stage and they suddenly play in the Premier League, or even if it's not in the Premier League, if it's another top league, their price is going to go through the fucking roof.
Completely.
And if Liverpool are going to operate the model that they've operated, which we know is a fine line, you know, they're not going to go and spend more than what they earn, then it becomes incredibly difficult to go and get in those players. So I think, I don't know, it feels to me like they are missing a trick at times, and we will never know what Jürgen meant by taking more risk, but it wouldn't surprise me if some of it is around just sometimes not being wedded to, well, we've got to go and see how they perform in a different league before we go and make the move for them. I think it might be, can we just sometimes take a bit of a chance on a McAllister, on a Casido, for instance? And I think that's where some of his frustration might lie, I think. I firmly believe that.
I agree. That's exactly what he means. I'm just not quite as convinced as a lot of people are that it's quite as easy as that.
I don't think it's as easy as that. I don't think it's easy, but I, we're sort of getting a bit sidetracked. And I think that there is another thing here, which is it is a really valid question of the manager, for instance, to say, but there's also understandable reasons. Like, ultimately, my argument where I end up on this is I think they thought last season was transitional, and I think they thought that they'd use players like Elliott, injury notwithstanding, Jones a little bit more, and maybe one or two a little bit more than they eventually do. And I think they thought, probably this season, we're going to be trundling towards second or third, relatively comfortable on the one hand, on the other hand, lining ourselves up, you know, maybe a cup run, maybe a couple of cup runs, maybe we go deep in Europe. And then all of a sudden, they can win a quadruple. And I think that changes everything. And so they run, like, I think it's mad. The you know, Henderson makes 56 appearances in all comps last season, which is more.
There's no way that was the plan.
There's no way that was the plan. And also, there's no way that, like, for instance, that's more than games than Arsenal play as an institution. He makes more appearances than Arsenal play as an institution, you know, as part of the point here. And it's not just Arsenal, there's a list of that. So there's no way Henderson playing 56 games was the plan when he was signing a new deal or anything like that. And that's what ends up happening. So they end up running for the line, and that's all really, really fair. And that's why I think last season's a little bit of an odd one. But you are in a situation where, for instance, you know, you can go through the list of players who don't play other than that mad moment where they all get dropped in at Southampton, and by the way, do pretty well on the whole. So I do take your point, but my point sort of now opposite a little bit is what Jake said before, that now if they have got another Caicedo who's knocking around, they might want to put 7 million in if they could get in for that. If they did that now, if they bought two or three of those lads in off the basis of, if it works, fucking great, we rise up the table. If not, we're still in the FA Cup. You never know what happens against Wolves. You know, we're now planning for the next 2 years. We've actually got, for once, we might actually have in a really weird way, a quietish 3 or 4 months to have a look at some stuff. Let's do that. But then you'd say to me, I'm sorry to do your bit for you, but fuck it, we're in it now. You'd say to me, yeah, but lads, he just played Henderson, Thiago, and Fabinho at the weekend there. He didn't pick any of the other ones again.
I agree, but I disagree to a point in terms of what I'm about to say. The situation has changed now. When if you're talking about signing someone like Caicedo and giving him minutes, you can do it now. You couldn't do it last year. You probably couldn't even do it the year before. That's fair. Either. It's not like a absolute that this is the way it is and this is the way it always is. It's in terms of if you wanted that player to be ready to play for Liverpool now, I don't understand how you'd have signed him 1-2 years ago and got him to be in that position now based on what the club did and based on what the manager's done.
So I'm intrigued. They've got links with a couple of lads from the French League, for instance, who look, you know, who 6'4", so obviously they've got my attention in there. And so I just
you're
wonder,
googling bigger ones.
I'm just saying, is there anyone knocking around? I'm on Statsbomb and it sadly doesn't do heights. You know, I'm thinking that, you know, I'm wondering if that maybe is the direction of travel, that if there's a couple of lads knocking around the French League who they've had their eye on, who were 19, 20, 21, who in the past they might have gone, we don't know where this now works, there might be a bit of an opportunity to say, you know what, between now and the end of the season, you'll get 15 games.
Exactly that, and that's pretty much exactly what I'm saying about how the situation changes and how you can sort of make different decisions based on the circumstance. And the circumstance now is we need to do something because we can't just carry on like this. It was working, it's now not working. Something needs doing, and that might be another £4.5 million lad from Ecuador. It might not be. I don't know who this is.
Yeah, well, you know, you've asked the boys there, you know, who would they sign? I'd sign Brighton Sporting Director.
Wouldn't they? Do you know who it is?
No, I've got no idea.
Do you know who it is? Genuinely.
I know who it is. It's David Weir.
Is it?
Yeah. Doddy Weir.
Fucking hell. Threw myself under there, haven't I?
Doddy.
Listen, get him in. And he sort the Blues out while he's in town.
Tried to get him and he knocked them back. He was the assistant.
Sensible man. Really? Sensible man. Yeah. Sensible man.
Dan Ashworth's at Newcastle now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Right, get him.
Okay. Wolverhampton Wanderers, anyone want to do anything mad? I wanted to play Trent at 6 or double 6.
Can we not turn up?
We can't not turn up, Phil. Okay. That's not that's too mad. I genuinely want him to. In terms of, again, the same thing about direction of travel, I think if there is a plan, if there's been a plan to do something with Trent at some point in the next 18 months, I'd sort of accelerate it now. I don't want him playing 8. I've no interest in playing 8. I think he'd get no space or time to do anything. But I think the idea of him maybe being able to shift what we're asking for from numbers, I'm fine with him playing Thiago at 6 at Wolves as well, if he wants to have a look at that. Because I think he's desperate to do that. And he's edging towards it. And if he's going to pull the trigger on it, I'm fine with him doing it away at Wolves. If he wants to just go for Thiago at 6 and then put legs around him, put young players around him, I'm fine with him doing that at Wolves if he wants to do that. I wouldn't be averse to having a look at Trent. I wouldn't be averse to him playing 4-2-3-1, where the two are Trent and Thiago. And sort of going from there if he wanted to do that. I'm all for doing something a bit mad at Wolves. I'm picking a fair few senior players, but doing something a bit mad at Wolves. Anyone? Anyone got anything mad? You've got enough madness in you?
Do you think he would?
Absolutely fucking not, no.
Because I just don't see it. Because I think now, at the start of the season, the FA Cup is way down your list of priorities. But I think Liverpool will be looking at it now thinking, well, how do we kind of make this season look semi-okay? You're not going to be able to do that because it looks like a bit of a write-off unless they can suddenly go on a big run. But I think getting some silverware certainly helps. So I think they'll be treating this not as an experiment. I think they'll want to go and try and win the game. And I think the time for experiments, I mean, they had all the time in fucking Dubai and you wonder what was going on while they were having that training camp and stuff. And they've had the pre-season. Yes, it was shortened and stuff. But I don't know whether it'll be a game for that, Neil. I think he'll go pretty strong, to be honest. But listen, one thing's for sure, he's got to pick a different midfield. He has to pick legs in that midfield.
I want him to go pretty strong. I just want him to be experimental. I think there's room to do both. And then also you can change it on 60. You can change it on 60 if it's working. You can change it on 60 if it's not working. You can.
You might even be able to change it on 90. Because it might go to extra time.
I just think it's a manager who
I don't want it.
But he puts so much faith in training pitch time. And if Liverpool haven't been working on Trent as a 6, I just don't see him just throwing him in.
It hadn't occurred to me it could go to extra time. And by the way, until he said that out loud there. Honestly, get on. I mean, at least we're up in the days where there could be a second replay.
Oh, Jesus.
Got pens written all over it.
Oh, fucking hell. Tell you what, this is grim, this, Jake. You want to do anything mad? Would you do anything mad?
I've always been adverse to the Trent thing, just because it was like, when the questions about him playing in midfield always came, it was like, lad, he's getting 20 assists from right back. But for the reasons that he's not getting 20 assists from right back anymore, that's exactly why I would do it. So I'm all in with Neil. Also, I'd get Davy Weir in centre half.
To be honest, there have been periods where I've looked at it this season and wondered if it was a bit more of a plan for earlier in the season with, you know, signing a right back who was the Scottish Young Player of the Year last year. It's not like we just signed some random kid and he might be all right. He's probably quite good.
Joe Gomez looks good at right back.
James Milner looks good at right back. I wouldn't have a problem with James Milner right back and Trent in midfield, and people might think that's absolutely insane, but I'd be absolutely fine with that. The only thing that would concern me on that is if they very cleverly played Adama Traore left wing. That would concern me, but that aside,
there's a mad one absolute bleep test, Phil.
Against Wolves a few years ago, if you remember, we played him at home during one of the few games where some people go in. Nico Williams gets booked after about 70 seconds and Adama Traore plays the opposite side for the rest of the game. It was the maddest thing I've ever seen a manager do. Yeah. Because all you just need to do is go, stand on him.
Just do that.
You'll get him sent off after 5 minutes.
I think he will be concerned about a centre-half, because without Virgil, and we don't know how long he's out for yet, but there are rumours he could be out longer than we think. And I think with Chelsea on the horizon, he's going to have an eye on who's taken to the pitch for that game, and I think he'll definitely play Gomez, I'd imagine centre-half, but I think he will have an eye on Canate's fitness, Matip's fitness, because the last thing Liverpool need at the minute is another fucking injury.
Matip was doing some stretches first half, wasn't he, when he looked like I think he slides one out, and he was doing, I thought he was going off there and then, which was fun.
But it
might have been for the best, actually, in hindsight, wouldn't it?
He himself was going, I've got one of your gaffer. One of them, innit? No, it won't come up on the scan. all right. Is it going to go to penalties against Wolves?
Yeah. I fucking hope not.
Is it going to go to penalties against Wolves?
No.
Is it going to go to penalties against Wolves?
Probably not. I mean, the draw. We had, like, sometimes you get good draws in the cup, don't you? Like, I remember we've got to Wembley playing home games, exclusively home games against lower league teams before, until the semi final. And now we've got probably the best team who won't make any changes in the fourth round away from home. Just,
but we get to go to Brighton as a positive. That is, like, I might do it. I had so much fun there in the weekend. I might not look to do Brighton away if we get through. Saturday night out in Brighton. All right then, that'll do. Sports Social Podcast Network.